The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network. Meditation doesn't have to be a solo practice. Meditation is more fun with friends. Looking for a way to drop in and hang out at the same time? Join us online at Omega Institute for a meditation party with self-proclaimed meditation nerds Dan Harris, host of the 10% Happier podcast, Sebene Selassie, and Jeff Warren. This three-day retreat will stream live from Omega's Hudson Valley campus May 17th to 19th. Don't miss the party. Reserve your spot at eomega.org/party today.
Experience the difference. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Discover hope and healing from the other side. Welcome to Messages of Hope with Suzanne Giesman.
Listen, they're all around you, close as a thought or a memory. Messages of Hope. Messages of Hope.
Well, hi, everybody. Gosh, I love getting together with all of you to talk about some of the subjects that are near and dear to our hearts. And today, the topic is near-death experiences and how that can change one's life. And my guest is Jacob Cooper, who had one of those experiences. I love having people on who have actually been across the veil while still in human form and come back to tell us about it. His happened at a very young age, and we'll hear all about that, and we'll hear all about Jacob, and hopefully it will teach you a little bit more about who we all really are. So Jacob is now a clinical social worker. He's a certified Reiki master, a certified hypnotherapist. I want to talk more about that, and specializes in past life regression therapy. But it's his near-death experience that led him to write a book. So he's a pretty new author, and I became acquainted with him when he reached out to me and asked me to endorse his book. So I actually do read all these books from cover to cover before I comment on them. And there, it was pretty well dog-eared and highlighted. And I think in the second half, if he will allow me, I'm going to actually read a rather long passage that totally touched my heart. But meanwhile, let's let Jacob touch your hearts. Welcome to the show, Jake.
It's such an honor to be here with you this afternoon. Thank you, Suzanne, for having me on.
You're welcome. I don't know where the Jake came from. Does anybody call you that?
Everyone calls me Jake.
You do. Okay. Well, there we go. That's good.
It's when I am introduced, it's Jacob, which definitely has a lot of symbology with my near-death experience, which hopefully we'll get into too. But I like to remain casual with Jake. Yeah, I don't work for State Farm though.
Yeah. I don't know that joke.
Oh no, it's a commercial from State Farm with someone named Jake. So everyone.
Oh, okay. See, I don't watch much TV.
Yeah.
There. Yeah. Well, let's get right into the meat of this, because again, that early on near death experience pretty much framed your life. There are no accidents. So why don't you tell us about it and just go into the details? Because if everybody's like me, we love to hear what happened.
Absolutely. I was the age of 3 years old. It was September of 1993. It was right before the Jewish high holiday of Yom Kippur, which is one of the most sacred, days in the Jewish tradition, a day of atonement, but a day before, within the Jewish faith, where our souls are trying to cleanse ourselves before we meet the Creator so that we could have a year of health, well-being, and just kind of removing any sin or negative behaviors that we might have done so we could start the Jewish New Year off the right way. And so we'll get into some of the symbology soon. But at the time, in September of 1993, I was going to a park with family friends. And this was, like a normal occurrence. This was a babysitter and my sibling who was with me and their children. And we would go to a local park together. And so, a couple of nights before this, I just remembered having an intensified, nightmare, as if I knew something profound was going to happen that I could not quite touch, which I really chronicle in Life After Breath. But I decided to really bury that, and I went into the car, and we went to the park. But in the back of my mind, there was something profound on the horizon that I just couldn't quite identify, but I had a knowing.
That's hard enough for anybody at any age, but to remember that and to know that at age three is meaningful.
Oh, yes. And we'll get into memory, hopefully soon, and how I think that this was able to be retained, how that was, possible. But I was going into the car, and in the car, I was getting a bit nauseous, but I suppressed that because I wanted to have a good time. There was just kind of this familiarity of almost this swirling energy that I felt that was calling me or just wanting me. And I've seen this before, and it felt like it was out of my control, but I just ignored the swirling energy that I saw within my mind's eye. And as I got out of the car, I went to the park, I burst out of the doors, and I decided to go into a slide and climb a ladder up on the slide. And as I was climbing each rung of the ladder, I noticed that my breathing became more debilitated, more resuscitated, and more belabored with each rung of the ladder that I was climbing on, until, finally I got to the top of the ladder, where I noticed that I was slowly beginning to suffocate, and there was no air that I was able to grasp on. I was just grasping for straws. I tried to call out, but as we know, for anyone who's taking any type of CPR courses, when you're choking or suffocating, you can't speak. You're nonverbal. Mm-hmm. And so I was in this place between the here and there, where I wasn't, fully really exactly in my body, because it wasn't functioning and I wasn't quite there. And I was just in this incubational place of endless suffering and, intensified trauma that I was experiencing from suffocating.
That sounds pretty awful.
Yes, due to the suffocation, my body's vital parts began to shut down, and they weren't responsive. They weren't working, as I had no oxygen flowing through me. And the last part that I remembered becoming aware of was my brain. And I was able to understand my brain through higher awareness, because my body wasn't really working. It's as if you try to go into your own car and the engine's not working. So what I tried to do was almost kind of get out of the car and look at the engine and see what was happening. So I was able to look at my body, and I had a higher intelligence. I was able to understand a lot more that I would have been privy to at 3 years old. Bear in mind going into, medical school, it's some of the information that was coming to me. And when I became aware of my brain, I was able to understand, all the functional components of it that I wasn't privy to at the age of three. And solely due to the deprivation of oxygen, my brain literally cracked in half, where I heard a large cracking sound within my brain, as if you take a power cord in a wall and just yank it out as hard as you could. And I felt a large crack, right in my brain. And once that happened, that's when I was able to really connect to that vortex that I saw in the car. And it went into me, through me, and I was going on a journey 1,000 miles an hour, upwards and upwards, so there was no end. And, I literally experienced a tunnel-like sensation where I was going in on this ride. The closest reference that I could describe is if you ever go to a Six Flags theme park and go to one of their, higher powered rides, with the most torque and speed. Sure. That's what I was experiencing. But this was a journey going upwards and upwards, and a journey within to no end.
Was there a feeling of fear at that time, or did that disappear the moment you started on that motion?
It was familiarity. It was a sensation that I've been here before. I know what's going down. The emotional fear that I had was the transition that I was experiencing, the adjustment. Even at 3 years old, it was an acclimation, where I was just thrown from one body of water into a total diametrically different body of water. And so I think the anxiety subsided, obviously, with my body suffocating in that place of incubational suffering that I had. But it was more of that quick, intensified, rapid transition that, you know, there was fear. And bear in mind, you know, people will ask what was experiencing this. Was this 30 years old telling it now, or is this at 3 years old? And I say this was an eternal soul. The deepest waters of myself was experiencing this beyond time, beyond measurement. The infinite eternal part of myself was observing and experiencing this. But that came still with emotions, with thoughts, energy, with understanding, you know, so.
Yeah. Wow. So now we're going through this vortex. What came next?
You know, right when my brain really cracked in half was when everything opened. And there's a statement that my brain cracked in half and God came in. Literally, that happened to me. You know, when my brain cracked in half, I saw myself going and ascending 1,000 miles an hour, upwards and upwards, where I was in this, what could I best describe as this infinite eternal light. And I was aware of my human brain, or the right side of my brain, and behind it, you know, which I was able to see a beautiful palace. And this palace was quite familiar, but it was so potent that I had to shield myself from seeing it. It was so profound. And the ecstasy and the euphoria of this was unlimited. You know, you see, when I was looking at this palace, to me, I can't say pinpointed as God as one being, you know, as one thing, because all of a sudden you have a limited God if God is just this one thing. But, you know, you can't make the infinite finite, because all of a sudden, if you just label it, then it you have a limited God. But I would say, to me, this was a light of infinite and a light of my connectivity, my essence, you know, a place where, you know, the highest possible point that you could possibly imagine, the climax of, you know, life was infinite, is what I could best describe. There was, in the human body, we're bioneurochemical, so we're used to caps on how good we can feel. And being out of the body, the versatility of the word unlimited was unlimited. There, you know, it was so versatile in unlimited time, unlimited highs, unlimited, you know, imagery in, you know, in light. But from looking at this palace, I could also hear vibrations and sounds. And these were what I could best describe as angelic choirs that were within this palace of light. And this light and these sounds were nothing of this earth. They were completely different than anything that you could see, hear, and understand, because it is far beyond the limitations of the five senses, you know. And so after that, it was an immense adjustment where almost I had to kind of, in a way, ground myself, because ascending that high was so overwhelming that I just almost couldn't handle it, the amount of highs and the amount of lights. And, you know, there wasn't a definite adjustment phase. And after that, I slowly became aware of a frequency or a vibration. And this was an expression of what I could best describe as a Christ consciousness. It wasn't that Jesus was standing before me physically and I was able to see him. It was beyond that. It was of, you know, an expression, you know, or in a vibration of energy. You know, it's almost kind of like a sacred whisper that I was hearing and feeling and sensing and knowing. And I firmly believe that is at the core who we truly are, which is just merely energy, energetic expressions, energetic vibrations. Sometimes we come through in form and body, but beyond that, we are just vibrations and expressions of the divine and the all that ever is and ever was. While in the presence, you know, of Christ consciousness, bear in mind, I was 3 years old and I grew up in a traditional Jewish Orthodox home. People forget that Jesus was born a Jew. You know, I can't say he ever died, but, you know, he, I guess, left his body as a Jew. And so he was more Jewish than most, you know, most Jews, in fact, but, you know, who might have converted. But it wasn't something that I was brought in with. And so it was a quite comforting, euphoric sensation. But, you know, within that moment, you know, I could just remember fears, in a sense of fears of leaving my body behind, leaving my parents behind, leaving that whole world behind. And this octave, this vibration really soothed me and really allowed my spirit to really ascend. And,
you know. Okay, so here you are in physical form, so something must have brought you back, but did you have other experiences before that happened?
No question. A lot of this was, you know, you see people, the same philosophy that I have of the other side, I have of God too, where, you know, the other side is here and also an infinite, you know, could feel infinite away. But I was going, and then moments later, I was shifting back to my body, which was at the top of the slide, and it was irresponsive. And I became aware of my own spiritual guides. There was a male and female entity, and they were to the two sides of me. They weren't in front of me, but they were to the two sides of me. And I saw that through their own force, they literally allowed my body, they literally manipulated physical reality and pushed my body down the slide. At the time, I was clearly aware of their names and who they were. And I felt quite embarrassed that I forgot that they were right here with me this whole time. And to this day, I have ideas, you know, of names, and I get their presence. But there was a no doubt and no question of their identity. Without any doubt, you know, impossible.
Would you call it a recognition?
I would, with spiritual guides and what I experience with connecting to them, it's almost the closest part to who you are as you know it. It's just your soul, and right, you know, on the most intimate part are them. And, you know, people will ask me the differentiator, the difference between an angel and a guide. And I think guides are so much more tuned on a micro basis to individuals, you know, where angels are more macro focused.
I have to tell you, I got to pause here because everybody's listening to this, but you and I are looking at each other through Skype with video. And Jacob, it's so bizarre. I look to the left of you, or it's your right side, and there's the sleeping Buddha, which I have right across the room here. And then I look to your other side, and there's this very large statue of an angel, the exact one that I have in my garden outside. We have two of the exact same icons. That's just a little God wink there,
showing
the connection. But so you're watching your guides pushing your body down the slide. Did you communicate with them, words or no words?
Beyond the concept of words, it was, you know, essentially, you know, the feeling that I had was just a sense of transparency or just embarrassment that I forgot about them. But, you know, it was an ascension that I had with them. You know, my spirit was, you know, felt infinitely comforted with them. And there was no, after that, there was no worry, much like the Christ consciousness. There was no concern. It was all in the presence of eternal peace. You know, and just a knowingness that I knew them, they knew me long before I got into this body. And it was an eternal connection, you know, with no bounds. But you know, the guides pushed me down. And moments later, I saw that my body was lying there at the foot of the slide. And the people that I went to the park with that day were trying to call my name. And so my body was flatlined, but to the side of it, I was aware of my own form. I wasn't able to look at myself, but I could feel like my own shadow, my own form that was to the right side of my body. And as they were calling me, I could really understand how those in the ethers and those who have crossed over feel when they try to communicate us, because they're seeing us.
Yes.
They're trying to bang on the glass.
Yes.
You know, almost kind of like a caged animal who's trying to communicate. And we just, you know, out of sight, out of mind, you know, and that was to me very frustrating, where they were like shaking my body and I was just trying to shake them back that that's not me. That
yes, I tell people that so often, don't think your loved ones aren't right here trying to communicate with you. And you've expressed some frustration, and there is that, I'm sure, at first. But everybody, trust me, your loved ones figure it out, and they figure you can't see them, and then they'll just try to get their signs through to you. But it's not an ongoing frustration.
No, this was, you know, this was at the time. I think the frustration was intensified because of the situation, in a sense that they were trying to call to me, they're trying to speak to me. And, you know, just the fact that I could see them, they can't see me, was frustrating. And, you know, I wanted to tell them that I'm okay, that all is well, I've never been better. Yeah. And I am here, I'm not there, you know, but they couldn't at the time see that they were just trying to call my body. And I could hear their words and their thoughts. And moments later, I became...
You said that very quickly, but I find that so fascinating. And I want people to make sure they heard that. You hear their thoughts as well. Yeah.
Yes, I will elaborate on that. And at Life After Breath, I really chronicle this. You know, when they were around me, I was not only aware of... You see, you think we know someone, you know, we see them at the... But when you cross over, you see them from such a different angle, past the human part, past, you know, this front. And I was able to really have an X-ray vision of their soul. And I was able to see their electromagnetic auric fields and become aware of past lives with a lot of them, and understanding some of their karmic ties and future premonitions, which have come to true, such as my brother getting into the medical field. And you know, so it was an awareness far beyond, you know, even our most intimate dynamics that we think that we have, or that we have a full grasp of someone. And this was just so far beyond. However, you know, the one thing that I learned is we never fully, truly grasp an understanding of someone. There's so much more to a person, even a spouse, a pet. We have an understanding, but there's so much more to that page that we see it as. And I was able to see their book. But moments later, I became aware of an endless sea of angels that were literally floating very peacefully right in front of me. And they were almost kind of like, I would say, very uniformal. I couldn't detect so much differentiation. And these angels were, I would best describe as cherubim, or they were like child or like angels that you see, you know, within art and, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so I really fully believe when artists are drawing, you know, that's a creative exercise, but they really are channeling, you know, with their right brain, and they're very much an open filter. But in looking at the angels, these angels were kind of like a brown or a bronze or gold, I would say, color. And they're literally floating, and I could hear them and see them. But they weren't so much concerned with me. Like, I was more fascinated by them. They were just doing their thing. Uh-huh. You know, my spiritual guides were focused on me, but these angels were just, you know, just there. And the best way I could describe it is you have this reality, but a slight dial, a slight tick overlaying this was the filter of this realm, of this angelic realm. And so they're all around us at all times. We just sometimes forget. And
that's it. And that's part of my teaching all the time, is that the remote control is our intention, and our belief fuels that. And what realm do you want to tap into? You control the remote control. Interesting.
Oh, absolutely. And so I was in awe at them, but at the same time, you know, that adjustment phase, you know, you still carry some of the adjustment or skepticism. I would say I was just overwhelmed by it, but I'm like, I just remembered having a thought like, you know, I know what these are, but like, oh my God, am I hallucinating? Is this real? And then, you know, part of me just grounded that thought and just understood that this was home. This was, you know, more real than anything that I've ever seen in life at that time. And within moments later, after seeing them, I became aware of what they were doing. They were really sending, you know, their own energy, their own healing to the planet, to the situation. Mm-hmm. And they were just beings that had no identity other than serving and giving light and giving love and giving healing. That was it. There was no, we're used to, if we do something good, we expect something back. The best way I could describe it was the highest, most unconditional, evolved degree of love, and infinite love, which has no cap. It's, you know, there's no balance to it.
I love that you've shared that with all of us who may think we're alone, to know that you saw that this realm exists and that's their way of helping us.
Oh, yes. And sometimes the greatest... The you know, working in the mental health field, I think synonymous with suffering is the feeling of isolation. You know, I think many times those are comorbid with each other, is, you know, that feeling of alone. And I think a lot of that is because that really goes against our phyla. You know, we are beings, yes, we have our identity, but we are infinitely connected to so much more than this one person, you know, yeah. this one individual. And, you know, that's one of the messages that I really took from that was, you know, the illusion of being alone and not having these beings all around us at all times, and seeing ourselves looking up at us and not down at us, and seeing us through such a deeper lens than the critical mind sometimes sees ourselves as.
You know, so. I love that. It so validates the way the Daily Way messages that I get from guides always end with, "You are so very loved."
Yeah. You know, and it's, you know, the one thing that I have had a hard time with delivering is just how different the principles and energy is over there than it is over here, you know, in so many accounts. And I think within each lifetime, the collective and individual is trying to find parallels, you know, to bring that here, obviously, and elevate consciousness. But, you know, most of us are not used to being loved for who we are. We're used to being loved for what we do.
Yeah, good point.
You know, and so the transactional, minute-to-minute self-evaluatory level of love is much different than the unconditional degree of love, you know, that's on the other side. You know, in moments, yes.
Well, we're going to have to go to break here in just a few seconds. And so I love that we're not even through your near-death experience, and yet so much wisdom is coming from it. We're talking to Jacob Cooper. His book is Life After Breath, and I love the tagline, "How a Brush with Fatality Gave Me a Glimpse of Immortality." So come on back after the break, and we're going to hear the rest of the story.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back. You're listening to Messages of Hope with Suzanne Giesemann.
Hey, everybody. We're talking with a pretty young guy here. 30-year-old Jacob Cooper, who had a near-death experience far younger than that, at 3 years old. And we've just been going through the sequence of events during his near-death experience. And I want to hear more, Jacob.
Absolutely. We have to correct that in a couple of weeks. I'll be 31, the same day as Shirley MacLaine, April 24th.
Okay.
But you know, so when my body was, you know, really irresponsive, and after seeing the sea of angels, solely within the distance, I became aware of a soul group or different family members that I knew, you know, throughout the onset of time. And they were huddled around me as my body was there, you know, lifeless. And I just felt, you know, in a sense, how could I best describe this? And I know I speak about this in Life After Breath. I'll use familiar terms. You know, have you ever made like a big promise, like you're going to go, for instance, to the army or something like that, and you have all these big gala parties and you make all these promises, and then a week later you come back? And so when I was connecting to this, to my soul family member, I just remembered the charting phase of this life and how, you know, a lot of this was planned and ordained. And then, you know, 3 years later to come back at them, I'm like, damn, I want to complete this. I want to do this.
Did you feel from them of what are you doing here feeling?
No.
Oh, okay.
This was my own stuff that I had from them. It was a tremendous reunion, and it was a real unconditional love that I got from them. but it almost just felt like a little bit of meshed. You know, if you watch Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and you see the grandparents there just on the bed, when you go with their soul family, it's just a part of you that you see almost, and it's just represented in different people and identities, but it's a similar octave.
It's interesting to me because you're 3 years old and you can't have that many people that you knew in this physical manifestation across the veil. So you just knew that you'd been around some lifetimes with this group. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I it would be very hard, hopefully, at 3 years old to lose that many people at that time. This was a soul family group that was past life connected. You know, the way I see soul family is it's kind of like a similar octave or expression of the divine, and you gather with a similar expression of the divine. You know, I once had an aunt of mine who was on her deathbed, and she told me the word picture, and she said, if you ever look at a picture of a family, there's distinct physical differences, but when you look in the depths of the eyes, you connect to the soul, and there's an undeniable uniformal connection to that. And then about a year or two later, I was sitting with the medium who, you know, she passed away literally a month ago, and she said, I'm connecting to your aunt, and why is she telling me the word picture, picture, picture? Oh, and that validated the profound message of soul group and soul family, this infinite eternal connection.
And it's why you sometimes meet somebody here and you just take one look at them and there's a recognition, even if you never met before.
Well, there's a beyond of a knowing that you have, you know, that's unexplainable when you just see them for the first time. And
I know that with my husband, Ty.
He would
validate that. You're just meant to be together.
Absolutely. And it's natural. It's smooth. There's no effort. You just get each other, you know, and no amount of time in this lifetime could build that up. It had to come from something else, much like other talents or Mozart playing at a young age, or, you know, it's these are things that you just can't accumulate within one lifetime, I firmly believe. But in connecting with them, I was posed a question as to what I would do in terms of staying or going. And I decided to get my delegated hat on. And I said, well, if I do stay, you know, on the other side, if I do stay in this lifetime, what will come out of it? Where will I go with it? And then slowly I began to see different images that came to my mind's eye. And these images were coming to me very quickly. And these images were relayed from this lifetime. And then almost kind of like you look at it.
Like a preview of coming attractions. Like we have the life review after a life, but this is like the life preview.
This was a life review, I would say, of the life that I lived in my lifetime, and also past life reviews, where I was aware of other lifetimes. And literally, I saw myself, and I saw the planet, and right in overlaying, kind of like, I would say, a parallel universe of this universe, I was going and bouncing like a ping pong ball to different countries that I lived on. And, you know, and I was aware of other carnations in different lifetimes, but the most close to heart lifetime that stuck with me was a lifetime that I became aware of that I took my own life. I was a teacher and I just had a hubris and a fall from grace. And I was cornered and I just felt there was no message of hope. There was no hope. And slowly but surely, I began to see the faces of the students that I had within that lifetime. It became just wrought with emotion from that. And I just remembered from seeing that lifetime, the clear understanding after leaving that no matter what you're going through, you know, there's an infinite part of ourselves that's profoundly stronger than any challenges that lie in front of us. Much like with my near-death experience, when I was suffocated from breath, there was an infinite spirit that I connected to, far greater, you know, than the suffering that I had. And just the understanding of the illusion of temporary suffering, the eternal light that we truly are at our core, you know. And then, yes.
Well, I keep going back to, I can usually hear other people's thoughts as they're listening on this show. And here, you're 3 years old, but you're very clearly giving the sense that you were timeless during this experience outside of the body that was breathless.
Yes. You know, I would say, no person is their physical chronological age. No person is a true representation of themselves to the world. There's an outer representation But underneath that is a whole underlying inner part of ourselves. And I view that as a sacred eternal observer. And so we don't come into this lifetime as just bodies. We come to this lifetime as infinite souls. And I firmly believe that it takes time between the soul and the body to connect with each other, or the inner and the outer to match each other. Mm-hmm. You know, and that takes time, the guitar player and the guitar to familiarize themselves with each other. And so when I was having this near-death experience, I just was able to look at age in a whole new way, where I was not this three-year-old. I was not this blank canvas. I was an infinite, eternal soul, far greater than this page of the book that people saw me as. I was beyond the page. I was the entire book and encyclopedia and then some of other carnations. And so this was an intimate awareness of a timeless soul in overcoming the temporary identity with a chronological age as my identity.
Beautiful.
And so experiencing this, I was then shown feature imagery of the life that I would live. And I saw a lot of students and groups that I was speaking to. And it wasn't that I saw myself as some pompous teacher greater than students. It was that I saw that I was one with this. I was one with the participants. It wasn't so much about the messenger, but the message itself, and so myself and the ego was taken outside. And I saw that, the hereafter is beautiful. It's always there. The window of bringing the hereafter into the here now was a unique potential that I had from having this transformative experience. And with that thought, I said, as beautiful as heaven is, bringing that to the lives of the other, being the harbinger of good news, is that we don't die. We are eternal, and we have an eternal breath, even when literally and metaphorically our breath is taken away, that we can never truly die. And that was a message that I wanted to recall. And from facing my own immortality, my own suffocation, I found an eternal breath within. And this eternal breath was who I am, within the Jewish tradition. And today is actually Holocaust Remembrance Day. Mm. I know a lot of family members of mine were slaughtered in the camps. But within the Jewish tradition, the word for spirit is ruach, which literally means the wind or the breath of God. And I experienced, from having my breath zapped away, that I remembered an eternal breath of God that I was created from, that I could never be removed from, even if my own breath and my own body was taken away. It was a reminder that from losing my breath, I found a new breath. From losing myself, I found a new self. And so
I love that.
Something that I remembered. And moments later,
that's our goal for everybody, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And I think when people are suffering, a lot of times, and I experienced this in my last carnation when I had the suicide, is we just almost feel suffocated. And I think on a macro basis, I expedited life after breath to get it to today's times, because all you hear on literal or metaphorical basis were people just feeling out of sorts, out of breath. And, my goal was really to have this book to infuse a new breath of life, to infuse an inspired breath. And we inhale in spirit and exhale, we experience that new level of awareness. And I think the breath is the ultimate gift. And from losing that, I had an immense amount of appreciation for it, because that really allows us to be in this body. And I wanted to do my best to honor that on a personal basis, but also to infuse inspiration, which is the oxygen of the soul. And that's what's needed in today's day and age.
Beautifully stated. Wow. So you saw some of your future. You must already have some sense that you're going to come back. What else did you experience there?
I became aware of this. And once I agreed on the future, a lot of things dissipated for myself, family members, my guides were starting to fade, the angels. And I was left with a thought, which was, I knew that I made a decision and it was black or white. There was no in between. And so I chose this body. I chose to continue, living this life as three-year-old Jake. And I just said, how do I know that this is going to happen? I had my own doubts that, when you turn down the afterlife, you want to guarantee almost that it's going to be productive, that you're not going to be burned at the stake or suffering your whole life or anything like that. And the message that I got was the power of thought, the power of perception, the power of entrusting your thoughts as the ultimate superpower, or the highway that you could take for the life that you have.
Is everybody listening?
So I became aware of that superpower, where in a sense that we are birthed from an infinite intelligence far greater than our own. And so at times when our thoughts are vibrating at a lower octave, our attraction gets off kiltered from, you know, the path that we were supposed to be. And many times the higher we see ourselves, the more we're able to go through life with grace and ease and flow and trust, versus giving more power to our own fears and having that govern our own lives. And so I was able to understand the value of trust and the value of an infinite intelligence far greater than my own fears, yeah, and entrusting that awareness as my
and
guiding
it doesn't
force.
Doesn't hurt to know, really know now, you have these guides literally on each side of you and this phalanx of cherubim around helping you along the way. All of us do. All of us do.
Yes. What I wanted to make clear within my near-death experience, and the reason why I got, you know, memoir focused, was, you know, since doing talks since around 2016, the common theme is people get inspired, but they just don't know what to do with it. And so my goal is for people to not be defined by my story. I don't pretend to have a monopolization on the hereafter. My goal is for this to feel a little bit familiar, to have a little bit of amnesia, to not be defined by my story, but to find yourself in my story so that you could really redefine your story and how you see the nature of consciousness and the nature of reality.
Well, it's an excellent goal, and you're doing an excellent job of it right now. So what else did you experience before coming back? Anything else?
Well, I remembered my mother was, you know, after this, I remembered being able to go back and forth and see my body transported, you know, on the ambulance, because I was suffocated and I was lifeless. And so they called the ambulance. And
did
I was
they ever
rushed.
Figure out what caused that, by the way, just briefly?
Yes. So I didn't, I can't believe I didn't say this early on. I had something called pertussis, which generically is known as whooping cough, mm-hmm, and left untreated for an infant, a child, or even some adults could be fatal. And so that led to my suffocation, was whooping cough. And it's interesting because it's a highly contagious upper respiratory virus. And, you know, I didn't necessarily intend to, but this was happening as I was finishing up the last pieces of life after breath. And so I tried to expedite it because there was so much symmetry with what was happening, the world around me. And so I caught it. Then a couple of days later, my brother caught whooping cough. And his reaction wasn't as strong as mine, but we were both in the hospital bed because whooping cough is quite dangerous and it can certainly be fatal.
Well, it was to you, but you had other plans. Yeah.
Yes, you know, and I remembered waking up on the hospital bed and being aware of my mother, who was quite distraught. And that same sensation that I had with trying to express myself to the people around me and to hear myself, that sensation lasted for around 20 years.
Oh my.
Where I wasn't able to fully express what happened to me through words to anyone around me. And so there was something inside of me, but I just couldn't come up with the words to really have it. And it's something that I held sacred within. And so becoming aware of my mother, in a way, the pedestal that I have of her, and it's not a knock on her, was that I saw that she was my mother within this lifetime, but she wasn't all-knowing. She wasn't aware of what I had. And there was, you know, I think with parents, we feel that they're omnipotent. They know everything. They know more than us. And having this experience, I saw that she wasn't aware, even if I tried to express this, of what was happening to me. And that was a suffocating experience in itself, where I felt isolated and alone. And it was traumatic to feel that degree of isolation. Moments later, I became aware of this, that I, due to the trauma that I had, which was a double-edged sword, you know, on one hand, as a psychotherapist, the trauma allowed me to retain the near-death experience and remember not just it, but the surrounding events of it. But, you know, with it was, you know, emotions that I had that I couldn't quite channel or express. And I literally the doctor tried operating on me, and I wish I could say this another way, but I became so angered that I, you know, literally got physical with the doctor and kicked the doctor and ran around the room. And I think a lot of it was just the intensified transition that I was having from being on the other side and then waking up on a cold hospital bed with all this inside of me and not being able to express it. And that manifested itself as anger.
Yeah.
You know, which I had a lot as a kid. And I was, you know, each kid in my family grew up with the same food, the same house, but I was by far the most defiant and the most difficult. And I do think the double-edged sword phenomena, the near-death experience, you know, influenced that a lot.
The contrast is tremendous. You go from that place of what sounds like bliss and what we call heaven, and then to be thrust back here and have to deal with this reality, this challenging for many.
That and just the difficulty of people seeing you and not really seeing you. You know, they're seeing an image of you, but they weren't seeing the real you. And it's still something that I have a struggle with today, is just explaining that we are not these physical bodies. We are not our chronological ages. We are eternal, infinite consciousness and souls. And, you know, that's really been the driving force, the driving impetus of my work, was really to allow people to really have greater connectivity to the deeper truth of themselves, rather than the part that they think of themselves as, but really it's a part that we're just almost kind of living, you know, based off of how people have seen us as, you know, and we're living that, you know, portrayal.
You said at the beginning of the show that your name, Jacob, is somehow symbolic with your near-death experience. Would you explain that?
Yes. You know, if those are familiar with the Old Testament, you know, in the Christian Judeo tradition at the least, you know, the story goes where Jacob, biblical Jacob, was fleeing his brother Esau and fleeing for his life. And he was took a stop and he set aside a bed of rocks. And this right now is in a place in Israel called Bethel or Bethel, translated as the house of God. And I actually have visited Bethel or Bethel, and Jacob had a pillars of rocks that he put his head under to sleep at night. And while he was dreaming, he saw angels going up and down the ladder, hence the term, the popular term, Jacob's ladder. And he saw the angels going up and down the ethers. And that's quite a versatile term, but, you know, principle or philosophy. But at least to me, it reminds me of the rungs of evolution, the rungs of eternal rungs of eternity, how we have the earth, you know, here, but an infinite amount of rungs, you know, to eternity. And each lifetime that we live, you know, hopefully we grow and ascend to a new rung of consciousness, a new rung of understanding. And I do believe the value of remembering allows us. I think a lot of people will say that we came here to learn, we're bad, we're this, we're that. I think not necessarily we're here to learn. We're here to remember. We're here to embody the beauty that we are. And I think getting past a lot of the illusionary viewpoints that have been portrayed on us in limited consciousness, and to get past that, to be empowered within our own eternal truths.
Well, it's stories like yours and the beautiful way you're expressing it today that help us to do that. So I'm really grateful for the beautiful way you're expressing this. When we first started and you and I were bringing up Skype so we could look at each other, you said, I can't see you. And I could see you. And you said, well, I'll just use my third eye, which just, I loved that. Because for those of you not familiar with it, that's your soul sense, your soul vision. You don't need the physical eyes. So this tells me that you have somehow tapped into your soul senses. Is that a direct result of your near-death experience, something you've carried with you throughout your life, or something as the result of what you've chosen to learn as a result of your NDE?
I think intuition, you know, is within all of us. But I think having near-death experience changed a lot of my bio-neurochemistry. From having my brain literally snap in half, I look at that and just remember that the brain is just merely the filter of consciousness. And I speak about this in Life After Breath. You know, after that experience, there was just this veil of light that was going into my brain where I was literally able to go into the doorways of eternity. And I had a lot of interdimensional communication. And I firmly believe that the brain is the filter between the two worlds. And I think firmly, if we're able to really get quiet, get into the sacred silence of eternity, we're all able to hear, intuit, and listen to the eternal flow, not flowing from us, but through us, you know.
So. Beautiful. Well, you've clearly carried over the lessons that you learned there and applied them through your life. I did learn in your story, you know, you did not have an easy go of it, and you have had a very challenging struggle with self-confidence and overcoming obstacles, and you're very courageous in explaining all of that in your story. But at the same time, there's a beauty in there that I remember when I read your book to endorse it for you, I highlighted one section and actually shared it in one of my monthly mentoring webinars long before the book even came out. Yeah. And it had to do with when you ran into your old principal from high school at a church service or a funeral. I can't remember what it was at the time. Right. Yeah. But you said something really nice to him and he snapped at you. Oh, I remember. It's right here. He said, you know, stop sucking up to me.
Right.
What a slap in the face. I'm not grading your paper. And you say you blinked a little caught off guard. This was the part I asked if I could share it later in the show with people. And then you say, I tapped into my heart and recognized the root issue of why people judge. When I chose to be light, that was what I saw in others. The world was merely a reflection and trick of the mind for really what was inside. And then you came back and you said something truly kind to that principal, and he almost couldn't hear it. He was so used to putting up that wall. And you said it again, and you brought tears to his eyes. And I just want to quote you here from your book, Life After Breath. I learned to look at others through the God lens to see the depths of a soul rather than through the surface. That's beautiful.
No, I do believe we're not just here to create heaven on earth. I do believe we are all heaven, literally on earth. That's where we come from. The earth is not our home. And I think retaining the vantage point, the as above, so below, and just as the angels see us, you know, past our defaults, they see us infinitely greater than what we do. I do believe we're here to embody that same vantage point to how we interact and see each other. It's not just that we go on the other side and become these beautiful guides. I think it starts, you know, here is a training course to be able to see others differently. Certainly if we speak to plants and we build up plants in the equal study, one plant will grow greater than the other. The same thing with ourselves and the same thing with another. And it's just amazing how if you tell someone something, they just become that, they remember that. And I view a lot of people who might have ill will or, you know, all that other stuff. It's not that they are that. They are just separated from themselves. And that's, you know, that's a painful part to be in. And we just wish that they come back to that true part of themselves. And oftentimes when we come through those angles, people all have the same needs. They want to be validated. They want to be heard. They want to be put up, you know, and, you know, it's just amazing. You know, not all are like that, you know, but I think a lot of people, when you look up at them, look down on them, there's a change of energy that happens and there's a shift that happens within yourself and within that person.
Well, I applaud your efforts to help us make that shift, Jacob. I love the imagery you just gave us of seeing ourselves as the angels do. We are out of time. I hope you all have enjoyed this beautiful conversation as much as I do. Thank you so much, Jacob Cooper.
My honor. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you, listeners.
Thanks for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Intuition is our spiritual GPS and the single best tool that we have for navigating our lives. I'm Victoria Shaw, and on my Intuitive Connection podcast, I will share with you the ways to connect with your intuition and awaken the gifts of your soul. In each episode, I'll draw on my own intuitive gifts and my training as an Ivy League trained counselor and psychologist to help support you in reaching your highest potential. Start listening now on Mind Body Spirit FM Podcast Network or wherever you find your podcasts.